It's good to have everybody here this morning. And I'm overly optimistic, I guess, in the numbers. And I kind of kidded Keith one night this week as he was up here preaching. Our numbers, those of you that were here for Sunday school saw the numbers that we had. We were consistent in the 70s. I think we averaged, 75 or something like that for the whole meeting. But one night he said that, I don't know how come him to refer to this, but anyway he did. He said we probably got 50 or 60 people here tonight. And I just knew that he was wrong about that, even though the number hadn't been posted on the board yet. So later on, the number was posted, and it was, I think, 74 or 75 or something. And I said, he's one of the few preachers that I've ever seen that plays the numbers down. I always play them up. I guess outrageously wrong almost every time. Well, Brad and I were talking before worship service started this morning. He said, I believe we're going to have 80 this morning. And I looked at the crowd and I said, I don't believe it's going to be hardly 80. And Brad, I was right about that too. But we're close. We're close. We're glad that all of you are here this morning. And if you didn't get a chance to come to our meeting this week, you really missed something. He is a tremendous, tremendous speaker, no doubt about it. That's all he does, is he holds gospel meetings around all over the country. And I got a chance to talk to him a little bit one night. And I know that he preaches all over the United States. And I had asked him, I said, Keith, how many of the 50 states have you preached in? And he said, well, I don't really know, but he said, it's in the 40-somethings. He said, I haven't kept it all down. He said, that number doesn't come to my mind, but he said, I preached in nearly all of them. So he is well known. He gets around all over the place. And one of the things that I have to admire about him, for those of you that were not here, Keith has got a son that's 31 years old, and he's in a wheelchair. This child was born with a brain damage, and he's not able to function like normal people are. And everything has to be done for this boy. Everything. And he takes him with him a lot. Smart. He is definitely smart. There's no doubt about it. He's got plenty of sense. But, you know, I guess he's like a lot of other people that he wants to be included. Did you notice that about him during the week? He wants to be included. And when you call Keith's name, people say, and me. And me. Did you notice that about him? He'd say that. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, we ought to feel like we're included. Every one of us in this service is one. Tell me, this is not a spectator sport. We're all involved, every one of us. Those that are worshiping this morning, if we're Christians, we're all involved. We're involved in the praying. We're involved in the singing. At least we all be. We have good singing throughout this whole thing. Well, be involved in taking the Lord's Supper and then to give it. Well, be involved this morning as we're doing it here. It's not about spectators. It's about being involved. And that boy, he just sort of, I think he sort of proved that. So we just had a real good meeting and we're glad that he was able to bring his son with him. And his wife traveled with him a lot. She wasn't here this week. But he brought that boy anyway. Took care of all of his needs himself. So we're glad that he was able to do that. One of the things that we ought to be impressed about the Bible is, as we read the Bible, and especially in the New Testament, when we read the epistles, a lot of times, for some reason, I don't know why we think this way, but for some reason, we don't think that the last part of that letter is as important as the other parts of it. You ever notice that? How many preachers are worse than you are? We're worse. Because the last chapter, say there's six chapters, the last few verses of each chapter, we don't seem to put very much importance in. And really what that usually, the last few verses, if it's Paul writing, or if it's Peter writing, or somebody else, as they close the letter, they will encourage the people to whom they're speaking. Just look at it. Here's one in Corinthians. Now, he writes to the church of Corinth, and this first letter that he writes has got 16 chapters in it. And in this last chapter, the 16th chapter, he starts to encourage. He's done address all the problems. And now he speaks to close the letter, and he starts to encourage the church. But another thing that he does, if not only Apostle Paul, but others do it as well, is that they warn the church. And you know what most of the warnings are about? If you go back and read it, every one of these letters, these epistles, whether he writes to Corinth, whether he writes to the Galatians, whether he writes to the Ephesians, or whether he even writes to an individual, say, Timothy, in that last thing, he'll say, now be careful, watch out. And most of the time, what he tells us to watch out for is, you know what? False teachers. If you don't think that, go on, sit down, take your Bible, start thumbing through it, and just look at the last chapter, and there'll be more warnings about false teachers than there will be anything else. Now somebody might say to themselves, well, surely. And these writers say they have a reason for doing that. Why would they do this over and over again? Watch out for false teachers. We're talking about the first century. This was just a little while after the church started. And already they've got to start warning about false teachers. Now I can see that 2,000 years later. Here we are in the year 2013. And we know there's false teachers. We hear it all the time. All you got to do is just sit down, turn your TV on, start surfing through the, in ours it's 300 or 400 or something like that. But anyway, we'll surf through our and you won't have that TV on 5 minutes. There'll be somebody on there that'll teach you something that's false, that is not the way that the Bible teaches. Now, you never told God not long ago. False teachers. Now, I want you to notice something. Now, Alex read something there for us a minute ago. He only read one verse. And I'm going to read just a little bit further. And this is something that we could and sometimes might overlook. But look at 1 Corinthians chapter 16. Now Alex read verse 9. And he said, for a great door and effectual is open unto me, and there are many adversaries. What's this telling us? Well, it's telling us that the church has got enemies. Why would the church have enemies? Who can find something bad about the church? The church ought to be something that's good in a community. All of us here at Mount Zion that were involved 5 years ago when the building burned down, we saw just a tremendous outpouring in this community of people that not only were they not members here at Mount Zion, some of them wasn't members anywhere. Remember that, Greg? Some of them wasn't even members anywhere, and they came out here to this location and they pitched in and they helped drive nails and they did all those things that anybody else did. And I sincerely believe that the people that did that, they did that because they liked the idea of having a church in the community. They want a church in this community. The church does a lot of good works. The church stands for
morality in this community. And even though they may not be members themselves, they still like the idea that there's an institution in this community that's teaching morality, and they want that taught in this community. But here, the church does that. He said there's many adversaries, there's many enemies. And so I thought it would be well this morning for us to just come on. Let's go on and see what else he said. Let me read a few more verses. Let no man despise... No, I'm in the wrong place. Now, if Timothy come... Now, he's closing the letter out. So most of the time, we don't read this because we don't care what he said to Timothy. If Timothy come, see that he may be with you without fear. For he worketh the work of the Lord, as I also do. Let no man therefore despise him, but conduct him forth in peace, that he may come unto me, for I look for him with the brethren. As touching our brother Apollos, I greatly desired him to come to you with brethren. For his will was not at all to come at this time, but he will come when he shall have convenient time. Verse 13. Watch ye, stand fast in the faith, quit ye like men, be strong. See that encouragement? See, and there's a warning. He said, watch, watch. Now, when we tell each other to watch for something, we're telling us to be on the alert. Look out for something. Watch for it. Watch for what? He said, there's adversaries, there's enemies. Church has got enemies. Now, we all recognize that the church today's got enemies. But I'm going to say to you this morning, if you'll look at this list that I've got on the board, most of our enemies are within. Now, you may be saying, boy, I hate to hear that. I hate to hear that. You mean we got more enemies in the church than we do outside church? It could be. I know that it varies from church to church, but I'm going to talk about some of the things that we've got. We've got outside enemies. There's many adversaries, but we also got some enemies inside the church. Let's look at one from the outside, and that's atheism. We're living in an age right now that we've got more atheism in our society than we've ever had before. At least in my lifetime. I don't remember when it's any worse. I was digging through my sermons the other day, some of the sermons that I preached in the past, and I picked up one from 1990. Now, I was preaching here at Mount Zion in 1990, and I was looking at my statistics and my figures, which Beverly ain't very high on figures and statistics. She says that's kind of dry. I need to avoid all the statistics and all that kind of stuff that I can. But I noticed that I had a whole list of statistics on there. And I noticed that in 1990, now I can't tell you where I got these figures, because that's been 23 years ago. But it said that 8% of the population of the United States were atheist. And I had a little notation on that sermon outline. That I thought that sounded like an awful high number, that 8 people out of every 100 didn't believe in God. Now here we are 23 years later. How do you think that our figures in atheism today compares with the way they were 23 years ago? Somebody tell me. Go this way or go that way, one or the other. Nearly every one of you are saying up. You are exactly right. The last figure I heard, and this was 2 or 3 months ago now, I don't think it's changed that much in 2 or 3 months, we are now at 16%. Can you believe that? We have doubled in 23 years. Atheism. And that's an enemy of the church. I don't know if you saw it, there was an article in the Park City Daily News this week about Texas school books. Anybody read that article about Texas school books? Now, you may say, well, who cares about Texas? Well, I'll tell you what's important about Texas. Texas is a very, very large state. And not only do they control the school books in Texas, but they provide school books for almost the rest of the United States. That's why it's important. And what they do in the Texas legislature, in the state house in Texas, affects what goes on in Bowling Green, Kentucky, in Warren County, Kentucky. Now, up to this point, Texas has been pretty much a state that believes in God. But Texas, like a lot of other peoples, atheism has grown in Texas in the last few years. And now they are getting a lot of school books in Texas, especially science books, whose theme is the same as saying there is no God, that we're all here by a process of evolution. And of course, they've got a lot of enemies in Texas over that theory. And now they've got a select committee in Texas that's going through their school books that are teaching this. And thank God that they are doing that, because we're being influenced by it. Because atheism has really grown in Texas in the last few years. And that affects Kentucky. It affects our children, it affects our schools, and it affects what our children are taught. That's how important that is. So atheism is affecting our society today. There are many, many people that no longer believe in God. It's doubled at least in the last 23 years. Another enemy of the church is worldliness. Now, we can blame that on people outside the church because of what they provide, and I put provide in quotes, in our society today. But you know, that couldn't really happen to us in the church unless we allowed it. There are so many worldly things that creep over into the church today that sometimes it happens and we don't even realize it. What about fashions? The clothes that we wear. We don't want to be out of style with somebody else, and sometimes that happens. Some of the things that we adopt in our society, sometimes the music that we have in our society makes us worldly people, people that you can't tell whether Christians or not Christians, the way that we talk, our language, the language that we use, the way that we dress or undress, as the case may be, and the way that we live our lives sometimes. People can't tell whether we're Christians or not. Now, I'm not suggesting this morning that we all put on black garb like the Amish or the Mennonites and a straw hat or the long dresses that the women wear. I'm not saying that at all, but I'm saying that we ought to watch ourselves. We ought to be wary. As Paul writes his epistles to people and to churches and warns them, be alert, watch out, and not let worldliness enter into the church. But sometimes it does. Another enemy of the church is modernism. Somebody might say, well, what's the difference between modernism and worldliness? Well, I believe that modernism is just a step past worldliness. And that is that people say that the Bible was written by men and it's full of errors. That's modernism. The problem is that where we hear that from is not from outsiders, but we hear that from insiders. That it's being that false teachers today are saying that the Bible was written by men, that it is not inspired of God. The Apostle Paul says that it is inspired of God, and that we are to pay heed to it. It also says that it's full of errors. And every once in a while I'll hear somebody say, well, yeah, the Bible's got a lot of things in it that's wrong, a lot of contradictions. But that's not true. The church today has become in some places a large social club. The church was never meant to be a social club. That's modernism. And for those that teach that it ought to be a big social club, like some of the institutions that man has created, that's something that we need to watch for. There are those today that say there is no hereafter. This is modernism. There is no hereafter. But it's okay to be a member of the church now because of the social value. And there are many, many people, when they move to a new place, one of the first things they do is they join a church to be respectable and to be accepted in that particular community. That's modernism. Point number four that I put on the board up here, enemies of the church. This is strictly an inside job. And that is traditionalism. We know that there are certain denominations that are wholly based on traditionalism that goes back centuries and centuries and centuries. And they carry on, they have their own language of different terms that they use, terms that are not found in the Bible. Now, we like to say among ourselves that we speak where the Bible speaks and we're silent where the Bible is silent. They're not silent in those cases. They have a traditionalism that they have had so long that they are never going to change that. And much of that traditionalism can be okay. It's okay as long as it's traditional with the Word of God. But it's traditionalism with a man's way of thinking and against the way that God thinks is two different things. We have the one, traditionalism, that the old time religion is good enough for me. I remember a song that used to be many gave me, that old time religion. Well, if it's the old time religion that the Bible speaks about, then it ought to be good enough for us. It was good enough for father, it was good enough for mother. That's the way the old song goes. And if it's the one that's found in the Bible, then that's the one to accept. But if it's different from that, as many are today, then that traditionalism can be our enemy in the church. We find today that there are many people that were not religiously based at all, who were good moral people, and people say today, well, we've got a tradition in our family. If you're a good moral person, you're going to heaven. But that traditionalism will not save one single person. And that can be an enemy of the church. It can be an enemy in the degree that people don't think that they need to go to church, that they need to be a part of church, if that traditionalism says that just simply because you are a good person, that you're going to be saved. The Apostle Paul said, Romans chapter 3, there's none good, no, not one. So goodness alone in traditionalism won't save us. Next point that I put on the board, and boy, you see this one. This one has really come to the forefront in the last few years, especially in the Church of Christ, and that is the charismatic movement. Now, we don't know too much about the charismatic movement here at Mount Zion because we haven't been affected by it like many other churches, especially in larger cities. We have larger congregations today in some of the larger cities, thousands of people, big churches, and they're very charismatic. One of the things that the charismatic people adopt is, if it's in your heart, it must be okay. If you feel it in your heart, rather, it doesn't matter whether you can read it in the Bible or not, but if you feel it in your heart, that's charisma, then it's got to be okay. It doesn't make any difference what you believe as long as you feel it in your heart. Some of these charismatic people today embrace dreams, visions, strange sights. And many of them, they go for things that sound better than what they have been exposed to earlier in their life. Better than the word itself, the charismatic movement. Some of the charismatic movement has stepped up their singing service, song service, to bands, orchestras, multiple instruments, and some services are dedicated entirely to instrumental music with no singing whatsoever. No singing whatsoever. It focuses on the instruments themselves and has nothing to do whatsoever with man from his heart and with his mouth praising God. This is part of the charismatic movement that we have today. Point number six, is satisfaction. I told Brad earlier that the proper word was satisfactionalism, but that's a big mouthful, so I just put satisfaction. I hope you'll forgive me for that. Satisfactionalism simply says this, that whatever you're doing is okay. Whatever you're doing is okay. What I may be doing and what you may be doing as we worship God may be two different things altogether in some churches today, but it doesn't make any difference as long as you're both happy with what you're doing. Just go ahead and do it. You don't have to check it by the Word of God if you're satisfied with it. Satisfactionless. Everything's okay. Everybody's going to be saved anyway if they're good people. Very few people are going to be lost. Not very many people are going to go to hell. Only people like maybe Adolf Hitler, somebody like Jeffrey Dahmer, maybe Charles Manson. They're just going to be a handful of them, but most everybody else is good people. And I'm satisfied that they're going to be saved. I'm going to be saved. You're going to be saved. Everybody's just going to be saved. Satisfactionalism. All religions are good. We have celebrities today saying that all religions are good. Don't make any difference what your religion is. You can have a religion that denies Jesus Christ as the Son of God, and as long as you are satisfied with that religion, then that's all you really need. Just go by your religion. Everything's going to be all right. That's an enemy of the church. It is an enemy of the Word of God, and it is God's enemy himself. Another one that we have, and I believe this touches almost every church, and that is the enemy of apathy. Now, most of us, apathy is not a word that we normally have in our vocabulary, but it simply means this. It simply means that we've got too many people that just don't care. Too many people that don't care if there are other people who are not Christians that are going to be lost and that are going to lose their souls in hell forever. Apathy. It kind of reminds me of the story that Jesus told in the 10th chapter of the book of Luke about what we call the Good Samaritan. He said that there was a man that was traveling from Jerusalem down to Jericho, and that robbers beset him and they beat him. They stole his personal belongings, his money, and just left him laying there as if the man was dead. And here comes by two religious people, one a priest, one a Levite. They came not together but at two different times. And both of them saw this man lying there in the road. And you know what both of them did? They just walked on by. That's the attitude of apathy. I didn't cause that. It's not my fault. It ain't my business. I'm on my way. I got something else to do. Let somebody else take care of it. And if we feel that way about people in our community, the people that we work with, sometimes maybe even kinfolks, they're lost. I know they're lost, but it ain't none of my business. It's not my problem. It's the preacher's problem, let him do the preaching. It's the elder's problem, it's the church's problem, but it's not my problem. That's apathy. That's one of the biggest enemies that we have in the church. We don't care about the lost souls of other people. The church is here. If they want to come, they know when the bell rings and let them come. If they don't, it's not my problem. And then the last one, enemies of the church that I've used this morning. This is certainly not the entire list, but just the eight that I picked, is stagnancy. Enemies of the church, stagnancy. Everybody knows what an old pond looks like when the water never moves in it and it just sort of grows over with that old green scum. How many of you would want to stop there at that pond and get you a drink of water? Not unless you just absolutely had to. And maybe it's got a smell coming off of it, that old stagnant green water. Look out there over it, and there used to be what we call snake doctors. Remember that? Dragonflies. When I was a little boy, we called them snake doctors, flitting around here and there, and you'd say, boy, I don't want any of that. And you know, when churches get that way, they get stagnant, other people look at them and say, I don't want none of that. If that's what that church is stagnant, and it's not growing, it's not moving, it's not fresh, and it's not vibrant, I don't want any of that. One of the problems that the church has today is that our adults sometimes don't know as much about the Bible as their children do. That ought to be an embarrassing thing to us. I am so proud of the young people that we have in this church. I'm proud of Ryan and Brett and Brittany. I'm proud of those that have brought them along, that are teaching them. They are doing so well in their quest to learn more of the Word. I just wonder that those of us that are adults are doing as well as our children in learning the Bible. If we're not, we're stagnant in our Bible growth and in our Bible learning. People that have been members of the church for years and years still, in some cases, do not know how to tell other people how to become a member of the Lord's church. Been members of the church for years and still don't know how to do that. Still not committed to the cause of the Lord. Stagnancy. It's an enemy of the church. I didn't give you all of them this morning. I gave you a few of them, but it's something for us to think about. Should there be one that's here this morning that's outside of Christ? If there's something that we can do to help you to become stronger, to help you to become greater in the church, be able to serve God better, we hope that you'll consider that this morning, that you'll respond. Brad, as we stand and as we sing.